to spend time today talking about the belief that the Earth is flat, or more precisely, a lot of people think sort of frisbee-shaped. This is demonstrably not true, but growing numbers of people are embracing the idea that what scientists tell us about a spherical Earth and planets orbiting a spherical sun in a rotating galaxy, that version is the conspiracy, and they've somehow uncovered the actual truth through direct observation. It's worth understanding how anybody could end up believing that. But before we smugly write these people off as crackpots, we should consider that conspiratorial ideas are not limited to folks who end up at flat Earth conferences and QAnon websites. The tendency to think this way is hardwired in all of us. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. As a journalist who covers extremism, disinformation, and the internet for the Daily Beast, Kelly Weil has actually attended a number of these conferences and met lots of people who are convinced mainstream science has been set up to hide the real truth from people. And what is most fascinating about the folks she's talked to is that if you're talking to them about something else, they might not seem so different from anyone else you know. Her new book is called Off the Edge, Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. Kelly, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we'll note off the top, you do not endorse anything that flat earthers believe about the shape of the planet or the workings of the universe. But that said, you've also discovered almost everything the rest of us assume about flat earth believers is wrong. Like what?
Well, you're right to note that flat earth is completely incorrect. And yet, I think a lot of people assume that flat earthers are walking around wearing tinfoil hats, or they're crazy, or they're unintelligent. And broadly speaking, that's not true. This is a theory that has a surprising appeal to people who might otherwise seem fairly normal.
We all like to think we're smart and that intelligence would protect us against this kind of thing. Why does it not do that?
Well, conspiracy thinking is something that we're all prone to some degree, and it's a thought pattern that emerges when we feel like we don't have enough information, or we feel like the information we have is uncomfortable, it doesn't uphold our prior beliefs, and we go looking for alternate explanations. That can be a very minor thought process. You can come up with a conspiracy theory about the traffic light on your corner, or it could really misfire in a wild direction, and sometimes that does lead people to theories like flat earth, which are demonstrably wrong.
So, Kelly, believing the earth is flat could be as simple as a misunderstanding. Why do so many flat earthers actually believe there is a conspiracy trying to convince people that the planet is a sphere? Like, why do they go to the place that there is some cabal of individuals who don't want them to know the truth?
It's a good question. You know, I think flat earth is so alluring to certain people because it's such a wide-ranging theory. This isn't like believing an alternate theory of the Kennedy assassination. This is literally a worldview. And for people who want a sweeping explanation for why large parts of the world feel wrong to them, this is a pretty good one-and-done theory. It also has a lot of other suppositions baked in. A lot of people like flat earth because it lets them assert certain things about religion. It often lets people assert a certain biblical literalism. So it's a useful theory for folks who want to believe it.
What did you learn about why conspiratorial thinking tends to increase in moments of uncertainty or rapid change in society?
Absolutely. So in moments of uncertainty, we go looking for comforting explanations. We go looking for patterns that we think might help us understand what's coming next. And unfortunately, although it's a reasonable thought process, it doesn't always lead us to truth. And so one example that I would use outside of flat earth is that early in the COVID pandemic, I saw a lot of people go looking for answers about what this virus was. And in those early days, there wasn't too much information. So the information that filled the void was often junk science. It was often conspiracy laden. And because people didn't have much to go by, they went to that alternate and conspiratorial frame of thinking.
I remember this thing that went around early in the pandemic that purported to be from Stanford Medical Center. It was not, and it was not true. But one of the things that it said was that you can protect yourself from COVID by just drinking a lot of hot water. And of course, that is not true. But I can understand why people who didn't at the time have any access to vaccines or any other explanations would have felt better believing this.
Absolutely. Yeah, conspiracy thinking is very much a comfort mechanism in many respects. You know, I'm in a lot of parenting groups on Facebook because I am a mother. And what I saw was people who had a genuine, well-placed interest in protecting their children turned to conspiracy theories because they didn't have much other recourse. So yes, they were talking about hot water, they were talking about turmeric, they were talking about essential oils, all things we know don't really help the treatment of COVID, but it was better than that uncertainty. It was better than having no answers at all for a lot of people.
And of course, medical hoaxes that take advantage of the thought process that feed conspiracy theory, I mean, they're bad for two reasons. One, they're not really giving you a cure. And two, there are times in which what they're prescribing may actually be worse for you.
That's absolutely right. You know, what's interesting is in this book, I delved into Flat Earth's origins, which are more contemporary, I think, than most people realize. They started in the mid-1800s. But the originator of Flat Earth theory sold fake miracle cures. He sold things like soda water that he said would cure people of all ills. And so this is a really alluring product. It's something that, just like conspiracy theories, will prey on people's willingness to believe comforting information that there is a cure and it's cheap and it's available.
You just alluded to this, but I want to get it all the way out of the way. It's not actually true that Columbus and his crew worried they might sail off the edge of the planet. Is that right?
That is right. That is a very modern belief. It's not true at all. And actually, we've known for more than 2,000 years that we live on a globe. It's surprisingly easy to prove. We had Greek mathematicians proving this around 500 BC. So this retconning of flat Earth is a common belief through the Middle Ages actually doesn't give our ancestors enough credit. They did understand that we lived on a globe, and by the time of exploration, no sailors were concerned about going over the edge.
Okay, so let's go to what happened in the late 19th century. This guy who started with kind of faith healing, his name was Samuel Burley. Is it Rowbotham? How do you say his name?
I think it's Rowbotham. I've consulted a number of British people, and that seems to be the consensus.
Okay, Rowbotham spent a lot of time trying to convince people the Earth was not a globe, and he published this pamphlet titled, this sounds very impressive, Zetetic Astronomy. What does that word zetetic mean?
Zetetic was Rowbotham's model of science. It postulated that you shouldn't believe anything that you couldn't personally prove, and on its face, that sounds appealing, right? That you should always be proving the information in which you believe. But that doesn't actually hold up. You know, I have never been to New Mexico. And yet I believe New Mexico is there because I've met people from New Mexico. I've seen it on a map. I read news stories about it. And so under the Zetetic model, I shouldn't trust that any of that exists until I go there by myself. So we need some model of trust, and we can't just constantly doubt everything until we personally prove it. And Rowbotham took that level of doubt, that fake scientific method called the Zetetic method, and used it to poke holes in conventional astronomy and conventional scientific wisdom. And that became the basis of the flat Earth theory that he put out into the world.
We should note, he poked holes by cherry picking, right? There were only certain facts that he chose to contest and make people doubt.
That's absolutely right. So, for instance, he would take a book of the locations of 2,000 lighthouses and where their beacons shone out, and he would find maybe three that he said, well, that beacon shines out too far for that to exist on a globe Earth model. And now any scientist would tell you, that's statistically insignificant. And in fact, people who did go and debunk his science found that the measurements were slightly incorrect. But this was cherry picking is a good word for it, because he was not making a good faith engagement with actual scientific fact.
Did he know that he was purporting ideas that weren't true, or did he buy into this belief himself?
It's very challenging to tell his actual sincere beliefs. Most flat earthers that I meet today are genuine in their beliefs, but Rabotham may have had ulterior motives. He frankly made quite a lot of money from this theory when he was previously fairly unsuccessful in his career. So it's hard to tell exactly how genuine he was, but we know that a lot of his followers were very sincere, and whereas he profited, some of them lost their life savings and lost the respect of friends and loved ones. So he is a bit of a question mark, but his legacy is not.
So, if Rabotham was building his following in the late 19th century, this would have put him about 100 years after the height of the Enlightenment. Why did Enlightenment thinking inadvertently give rise to so much conspiracy theory?
Enlightenment thinking was tied in many ways to liberalism, was tied to a growing faith in sciences, and maybe a decreased emphasis on the role of religion in daily life. And you can imagine that there was a backlash to that. There was a reaction. There were people who looked at emerging scientific fields, as Rabotham did, and saw them as a threat to religion's place in the world. So when they were able to put forward broad conspiracy theories like Flat Earth, it allowed them to dismiss a lot of scientific doctrine, a lot of Enlightenment doctrine, and try and coax people back to a more biblically literalist or more fundamentalist version of the world.
So, Rabotham did not shy away from these public debates with actual scientists of the day. He didn't always, walk away a winner from those. How was he treated by the media of his own time?
It's very funny for me to have read the media portrayals of him at the time because there are some parallels, I think, to how media treats conspiracy theorists today. In many cases, he was treated almost like a carnival act. He would come to town and give a lecture, and the newspapers would hype him up beforehand and write a funny review of the speech he gave. But even though most people probably agreed with the newspapers and agreed that he was a bit of a joke, he did manage to convert certain people. And some of those people showed up to those lectures because they thought it would be funny, because they were there for the spectacle. And I think Rabotham understood that, yes, he could debate scientists and maybe not win, but draw enough attention that people would pay him money and people would start to convert to his theories. So there was definitely an inadvertent media effect on him that inadvertently fed his false beliefs.
So the ridicule made people want to go see him, and then they got there and they ended up convinced.
Absolutely. And he made some arguments that seemed credible on their face. People who engaged with the scientific literature would know that they were wrong, but for people who wanted to believe, it was relatively easy for them to convert.
Kelly, how did flat earth thinking catch on in the United States, beginning once again with a guy who started building a following based on faith healing?
Flat Earth has a really interesting US-based history, and some of the earliest American flat earthers were almost a cult. At the turn of the 20th century, there was a town called Zion, Illinois. It's still a real town, it's lovely. But at its founding, it was created as a fundamentalist Christian community where this one church would be able to control the rules in the schools and how land and parks were managed. Unfortunately, not long after its following, its leader turned to militant flat earth belief. And he used that to rule with an iron fist. He put flat earth in the schools. He outlawed even references to the globe in church hymns. And this was the prevailing belief of the town for several decades.
This guy did not hesitate to make a spectacle of himself, right? Like, tell us a little bit about his style when he went out in public.
Sure. So this was a man named Wilbur Glenn Voliva. And although Samuel Rabotham seemed like a fairly good-natured fellow who was interested in debate, Voliva was a really fire and brimstone preacher. He did not tolerate dissent. He when people challenged him in local elections, made all these crazy conspiracy theories about vote rigging, some of which might sound a little familiar to listeners. And he had some very personally outlandish tactics. He said, for instance, that he only ate Brazil nuts and buttermilk, and that that diet would sustain him to something like 120 years old. So a really outlandish, but at times frightening figure.
How does the embrace of zetetic inquiry shape the way flat earthers argue their case today?
So what you need to understand about both zetetic inquiry and flat earth is that although they pose themselves as logical explanations, they're really counterfactual. Both of them require people to discard information that doesn't suit them. So a flat earther will say, I believe Earth is flat because I've looked at the horizon and it appears flat to me. I can't see any curvature. That statement requires them to discard evidence that shows that the sun sets over the horizon degree by degree. You can watch it on an average day, or you can see ships disappear over the horizon hull first, and that's because you're seeing them dip below the curvature. So when they make these assertions, they're tossing out information that they don't want to deal with. And that was very crucial in early zetetic science because both of these theories require people to only engage with the information that suits them.
So they're not wrong, right, that most of us believe lots of things we have never been able to personally and directly observe. We all sort of understand this and we have to live with it or else we would never believe anything. What puts some of us at risk for latching on to things that have no solid science behind them and allows the rest of us to be a little more skeptical of those claims?
You know, it's challenging. And I think, although maybe some people are a little bit more drawn to conspiracy theories, this is something that requires all of us to have a motivated mode of thinking. It's something that people do when they have reason to believe misinformation. And so if someone feels threatened, say, by political circumstances, they might latch onto a political conspiracy theory. The same goes with religious beliefs. And you know, one other thing that I would flag is that often conspiracy theories are alluring to people who feel a little down and out, people who might be experiencing some form of instability, be that employment instability in a relationship, or feeling as if they're not valued in their community. And sometimes conspiracy theories allow someone to formulate a story that makes them feel good about themselves. It might make themselves feel better about why they can't get a job, or it might reinforce their self-esteem about themselves or a community to which they belong. So all of these theories are appealing in their own way under the right circumstances and the right pressure.
The flat earth movement quieted down a lot for many decades. Why did it make such a strong comeback starting 6 or 7 years ago?
You know, we can broadly blame the internet for this. In, say, the 70s, if you were a flat earther, it was quite unlikely that you would meet another flat earther. That was just because it's still a fairly unpopular theory. The internet makes it easier to network with other people. And often that's a very good effect. It helps people plan activism where it might not be possible, or to find communities. But in this case, it allowed flat earthers and other conspiracy theorists to network and to share their theories with each other and to spread them. And the other component of this is algorithmic spread, social media. Sites like YouTube have algorithms that recommend content that it thinks you're going to want to watch. Often what all of us, including me, want to watch is things that are a little out there, a little sensational. And Flat Earth is a fantastic example of that. So from about 2014 to 2019, Flat Earth videos performed very well in YouTube's recommendation algorithm. You could be watching something only tangentially related, say a video about outer space, and get recommended a Flat Earth video. So that's how a lot of people accidentally stumbled upon this theory for the better part of 5 years. And during that time, people were also building online communities that supported the infrastructure of this theory.
Do these videos tend to look like something that might be produced by NASA or a university or some other credible source of information?
They did not. And to a certain degree, I think that helped them. A lot of conspiracy theories pose themselves as countercultural. There's kind of a rebellious nature to them. They say that this is the information that authorities don't want you to know. And so, whereas a NASA video might be very slickly produced, but come off as a little impersonal, a little scientific and ivory tower, these flat Earth videos would have somebody speaking directly to the camera. They'd be informal. And you might realize that you actually kind of like this person. You want to keep watching their videos. So they came at it from a very different approach where they were able to appeal to the everyman and create these characters that people really related to. Very much a far cry from scientific videos.
So, for folks who get convinced by this stuff, Kelly, you describe a kind of push-pull effect, right? Rejection from mainstream society and then affirmation by this small group of fellow believers. What makes that such a powerful combination?
So, a lot of conspiracy theories work on something almost like a team basis. It posits that there is an in-group, a select group of people who understand a conspiracy theory and know the real truth, and there's an out-group. That's everybody else who's either blind to the truth or who is actively conspiring against people. And when people get very involved in these theories, they tie their identities to this group a little bit. And that often causes them to pull away from loved ones, be that friends or family or colleagues in the real world. They might get into arguments about their conspiracy theory. I've met people who were fired from their jobs because they wouldn't go stop going on about flat Earth at work. And when they lose those real world connections, they turn even further into the conspiracy community for support and for friendship and to make up for the things that they lost. And in that way, they are drawn even further into this conspiracy belief. And I think even further from the shared reality that we should all, I think, be stewards of in some way.
So the rest of their lives may be falling apart, but this belief gives them purpose.
It does give them purpose. It gives them, I think, immediate emotional sustenance. But in the long term, I think these social effects can be very harmful. And I've met a number of people who have ultimately come to realize that.
Tell us the story of Mike Hughes.
Mike Hughes was, for several years, one of the most visible faces of the Flat Earth movement. He was a really interesting guy. He's someone I personally liked, and he was sort of an Evel Knievel figure. He was an amateur stuntman. And he had this idea that he would launch himself in a homemade rocket ship thousands of feet into the air and take a picture of Earth's curvature or lack thereof, and therefore settle the debate. He did a lot of test launches, and some of them were pretty dangerous. It's something that we did discuss during his life. And unfortunately, in February 2020, one of those launches went terribly wrong and he died on impact. And after his death, there was some debate about the sincerity of his beliefs. His agent said that he wasn't really a flat earther, that he did this for attention. And I went back and I talked to a lot of people who'd known Mike in his life, and they said, yes, he was a flat earther. And, that they said that they personally weren't, but that they couldn't get him to stop talking about this theory. It's something that he was really passionate about. And I think the best answer I got was from one of his friends who was there on the day of his death. And he said that Mike hadn't been certain about flat earth when he got into it. He may have been into it because it got him attention, but he spent so much time with the theory that he did come to believe it. And I think what I took away from that is that whatever he believed at the time of his death, he had spent so much time promoting flat Earth that it really raised its profile and it became a lot of his legacy.
So Hughes's death, I suppose, didn't actually prove or disprove for flat earthers this kind of thinking. Did it cause anybody within that community to rethink their faith in this idea?
I don't think it did. His launch that day was not setting out to prove flat Earth. He wasn't going to be able to go high enough that day to take the picture that he talked about. And in fact, there were actually conspiracy theories about Mike that he was a government plant to distract from flat Earth, things like that. So I think, although this was one of the more somber events that's happened to the flat Earth community in recent years, that it didn't ultimately change anyone's minds because people's minds were already made up.
If many conspiracy theorists are already deeply distrustful of government, is there a role for public policy here? Can we fix this without literally censoring people and what they're allowed to say?
This is a tremendously challenging problem. And we're right now, I think, in the midst of a debate about exactly how we moderate online speech, about what responsibility we have toward disinformation, at least online. One thing I would say is that I mentioned how YouTube, for about 5 years, artificially promoted Flat Earth via its algorithms. They stopped doing that in 2019 because there was a lot of pushback. And they changed the algorithm. They didn't ban Flat Earth. They just stopped giving it the artificial boost. And that did help curb its spread a little bit. So, one thing I would suggest is removing algorithms that give misinformation a harmful boost. But outside of that, I think it's an ongoing discussion. Everybody does want some form of moderation online. There's simply some content that's absolutely harmful, and not a soul supports it, and it gets removed. But after that, it becomes more of a gray area, more of a discussion about what risks we're willing to harbor online and what the risks are of taking it off. And that, I think, is a very challenging proposition, and it's one that requires a lot of dialogue from policymakers and tech companies and all of us as people on these platforms.
Is there some reason people who tend toward conspiracy theory often distrust government? I mean, most people know at some level on of their daily lives, know people who work for the government, including the federal government. Is there some reason why this is like a shared characteristic of people who embrace conspiracy theory?
I think the government is a very easy, I don't want to say scapegoat, but something like a scapegoat for people who are looking for an explanation of why things feel wrong. And that's understandable. The government is so wide-ranging and probably includes elements that everybody doesn't like that you can find a foothold in that distrust. That said, I've been looking into how conspiracy theories about governments play out in other countries, and I found some interesting things. And I found that in countries that where the government gives people more reason to trust, certain conspiracy theories are not as viable. Brazil, I think, has a lot of conspiracy theories, but what it does have is a fairly robust public health system, and we've seen that conspiracy theories about vaccines are much lower than expected in Brazil. So it's interesting, and I think it takes into account people's previous interactions with the government and how inclined they are to trust it again.
What do psychologists who help people emerge from cults suggest to those of us trying to maybe help a friend or loved one recognize the error in their beliefs about some fundamental truth in the world?
So, conspiracy theories are not cults exactly, but they share a lot of the same psychological underpinnings. They emphasize a person's belonging in a group and they discourage people from taking in information from outside that group. So, what psychologists who focus on cult exit will tell you to do is to help bring someone some grounding in the real world outside of that community that they've placed their trust in. You can point to places where that community has led them astray. I think of a lot of apocalyptic conspiracy theories that give people prediction dates about when the aliens are going to come. And you can point and say, did that premonition come true? Did that prophecy come true? And you can add up the evidence in a respectful discussion that doesn't belittle a person, doesn't make them feel bad about themselves, and maybe brings them closer to reality by instilling a little bit of doubt in the dogma that they've been accepting.
What did people make of you visiting these conferences and events as a journalist? Did lots of people try to convince you that the Earth is flat?
What's funny is that people always started their conversations by trying to convince me. But after a few minutes of conversation, it changed and people started telling me about themselves. People really wanted me to know about hardships they'd faced since getting into flat Earth, about loneliness they felt and how they wished that people would understand them and embrace them back. And I think that was more telling to me than any scientific evidence they tried to put forward. It really told the story of why they were believing and what emotions had led them to that place and what was keeping them there. And throughout the book, those are the narratives that I try and return to, less about the arguments for flat Earth, because frankly, they're all a little silly, and more about the emotions of belief.
Did you have to resist the temptation to try and set them straight?
Sometimes. I don't try to debate flat earthers. One thing I've found is that debating them in these contexts is often not helpful. It makes people double down onto their own beliefs because no one wants to be proven wrong in public. But what I will say is for people who maybe have a conspiracy theorist in their life who they're trying to reach, it helps to do it from a place of trust. It helps to have that conversation with someone that a conspiracy theorist already knows and already likes. And I think as a journalist, I'm not quite the right person for those discussions, but it's, I think, a worthwhile pursuit for folks who want to try.
And you did meet people who had come back from that belief into more traditional belief in the globe and science.
That's right. You know, it's hard to talk to former flat earthers because often when people leave the theory, they're a little embarrassed about it. But I was really grateful to speak with a couple who not only had they left flat earth, but they'd made YouTube channels trying to help other people find their way out as well. And what was really helpful in their conversion was having respectful conversations with people who didn't belittle them, but who helped them understand that the round earth was a reality that they should uphold together.
Kelly Weil covers extremism, disinformation, and the internet at The Daily Beast. Her book is called Off the Edge: Flat Earthers, Conspiracy Culture, and Why People Will Believe Anything. Kelly, thanks very much for spending this time with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can subscribe to our podcast free wherever you get podcasts by searching for KERA Think. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.